Hi, I'm the person whose closet is put in color order, but I'll also pick up an earthworm without thinking twice. In fact, I did yesterday. It needed my help. I'm not afraid to be a little messy. Human nature is messy, but nature can help us embrace it. I love the brand Seventh Generation. Their laundry detergent lifts away tough stains with the power of bioenzymes. That's exciting. You wipe your hands on your pants after you pick up an earthworm. Seventh Generation is like, don't worry. Hug a dirty tree. Huff some bark. It's good for you. That is the power of Seventh Generation. Find laundry detergent and other laundry products at seventhgeneration.com. I love worms. So I have four nieces and nephews, and I was talking to my sister about IXL. And IXL Learning is this fun online program for kids, and it covers math, language arts, science, and social studies. My sister and my nephew love it. The way it works is it's powered by AI, so IXL gives the right help to each kid. And IXL is used in 95 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. Maybe you've been looking into private tutoring, but it's out of the budget, or this is a big school year for your kiddo. So make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. And Ologies listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXL.com/ologies. So visit IXL.com/ologies to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price. Oh, hey, it's the dog in the back seat of the car next to you. Allie Ward back with episode 3 of Smologies, bite-sized, classroom-friendly versions of our deep dive ologies classics. And this one makes me so hoppy because toads. Get it, hoppy. Are toads the unsung underdogs? Are they warty friends yet to be made? Do they belong in a heap of canceled beasts who don't deserve our admiration? You'll find out. Okay, Boofology. Let's go down a toad hole. So Boofology is a word that I did not make up, although it's seldom cited, to be fair. A 2011 Reptile magazine article titled Ode to a Toad uses the term Boofology 101, so I'm going with it. There's also herpetology, which is reptiles and amphibians. There's batrachtycology, which is the subfield that is just amphibians, which I may have pronounced wrong. But what if I want to do a frog episode down the line or one on newts? So I'm going Boofology because it exists. People use it sometimes. Also, its root is bufo, in the Latin for toad, which may come from a word meaning slimy plant, or it may also come from buffare, meaning to puff up, and buffoonery is a related word. It's debatable, like toads for some people.
Speaking of people, get ready to hear a scientist passionately describe a love of toads. She's so human. I cherish her. She was once the program manager for the Association of Fish and Wildlife Agencies, where she also served as a national coordinator for partners in amphibian and reptile conservation. She worked as a biological science technician for the USGS, the U.S. Geological Survey, and now works in the nonprofit ecology sector at Conservation Science Partners, but is still in the field a bit, out toading and salamandering and frogging and newting. So hop on into a conversation with amphibian enthusiast and boofologist Priya Nanjappa.
Okay, but what makes a toad a toad? Straight away, what is the difference between a frog and a toad?
Okay, so generally speaking, most frogs have like smooth skin. They tend to need a closer association with water or aquatic environments. And then the toads that we traditionally know, you know, with the big kind of stout fat bodies and the warts and everything, they typically can be away from water longer and they don't need as much of that sort of direct moisture the way that frogs do. And then they also secrete these toxins from their skin.
Really?
And so, yeah. And so like, that's the biggest thing. There are some frogs that do that as well, but pretty much all toads have some sort of gland, you know, that they secrete some sort of bufo toxin. And so
Bufotoxin,
that's
God,
what it's called.
Like such a good punk band.
Right? Yeah.
That would Bufotoxin. Be. Is their skin thicker? And what exactly are the warts? Are they air quotes warts?
That's a good question. These warts on toads are associated with these, they have mucus glands and granular glands, but the granular glands are the ones that are responsible for the toxic secretions. Oh, and it's for an anti-predator defense, so that when anything, you know, grabs it, it just tastes bad and they spit it out, you know, or sometimes they'll get sick. Some of the toads produce some pretty strong toxins. So all toads are frogs.
Okay.
But not all frogs are toads.
Oh, I love those. So, it's the old cactus succulent.
Yes.
Like all cactus are succulents, not all succulents are cacti.
Yes, exactly. Okay. And like in the amphibian world, there's like newts, you know, like all newts are salamanders, but not all salamanders are newts. And newts are to salamanders like toads are to frogs, kind of.
I didn't know that. And, okay.
Early lineages of toads are, they look more frog-like.
Okay.
And so like over time, those different features, the more like stout bodies and the bigger warts and glands and things like that appear kind of later in evolutionary history. They came after frogs. So somewhere in that like Cretaceous Cenozoic period, they've been around.
So to recap, toads are frogs and toads have no teeth. Yes, for warts. They've got a poison gland behind their eye called a parotid gland, thought to have been like an adrenal gland, just gone bonkers. Oh, and another souped up special feature not available on the standard frog model.
And then the other really weird thing is that toads have this thing called the bitters organ.
Okay.
Which sits like kind of between the kidneys and the gonads. And I think both males and females have them, but they're thought to be like a primitive ovary.
What?
Or like, it's kind of like a spare set of follicles, but the males have it too. And so like in experiments in the lab, they've removed the testes and all of a sudden this bitters organ like is like, oh, okay, time for me to come into play. And then like it starts forming eggs.
How long have toads had a place in her life and her heart?
I remember my first toad sighting, which was in my mom's garden in Iowa. And it just would like hop along the tomato plants and eat things. And like eventually we figured out that we could build a little toad hut like out of a pot, you know, and just put that in there. And it would just, you know, go and hang out. And I was so sad on the days when I didn't see it. Like, I'm sure it was all seasonal, but I don't remember, you know, the specifics of it. And I do remember other people's houses where there'd be one like sitting under the gutter, eating the flies and stuff like that. And I liked other critters too, but there was something about the toads that I just kept coming back to that I just kept like, I don't know. I just love them. They just have that face, you know, it's just that face.
I love that you had a toad friend. Like the toad was your friend.
It kind of was my friend.
Are the males bigger than the females?
The females are bigger than the males.
Oh, by usually. A lot?
Yeah, by a lot.
Oh.
Yes. Yeah, usually by quite a bit.
Oh, and both have tympanums to hear sound, such as, for example, the romantic, screamy love ballads mantoads make by inflating an air sac like a big extra chin, kind of like having a subwoofer on your face.
So another thing that's really cool about toads is they have a lot more bony material in their skull, like their skulls are like highly ossified, and those crests and the shape of those crests and stuff are what you can use to distinguish species when they are like in the same area and you have a lot of similar looking little brown toads with warts other than the warts per spot. Certain species, it's warts per spot. So like in the like dark brown spot, there'll be like two or three warts if it's an American toad. And then if it's a Fowler's toad or something or Woodhouse's toad, they'll have more in each like dark spot. And then there's like the shape of the parotid glands, which are the things that produce like behind their eyes that produce that more of the toxic secretion. And then those little crests and bosses and ridges and everything. That's how they differentiate themselves. But yeah, so they have these really cool skulls. Frogs don't have that.
So next time you see a toad, absolutely okay to say, hey, what's up? Your skull looks totally cool. But where can you see a toad? Are toads on all continents?
Everywhere except Australia, which right now is only being overrun by the invasive cane toad. Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yes. Yeah.
Australia got a little bit ripped off on the toad card, and then they got payback.
And then
they got, kind of.
And they didn't used to be on Madagascar either, but now there's a different toad that is found on Madagascar that's also super invasive and wreaking havoc. So yeah, unfortunately, the toads that are finding their way to places where they never were are like the ones you just don't want to be there.
Okay, let's loop around back real quick and talk about cane toads, shall we? Okay, great. So these are these huge toads. They're also called marine toads, even though they're terrestrial. But the largest recorded one measured over 9 inches long. They look like holding a big leathery pretzel roll, but with legs. They eat everything from like live bats, sometimes plants, to bugs, to dead animals, to just straight up garbage. Sometimes just literal actual garbage.
Another reason we love toads? They're not too picky. Can you ever have too many toads? Now, in some places, perhaps, like those so-called marine but actually terrestrial toads in Australia, the cane toads. Why are they there?
So I think it was like where they were growing sugarcane, they had brought them there to control like the bugs, you know, that were eating the sugarcane.
Oh,
and then,
no.
Of course, you know, anytime you bring a thing to control the thing that you don't want, then that thing goes, you know, crazy. Yeah, so there are these big, beefy marine toads. And so they can live, they can tolerate like saltwater environments, but they also apparently can live all over the place.
Does Priya have a favorite toad? Yes, she has a soft spot. She has a soft, warty spot for American toads because they were the first she saw in the Midwest. But she did clarify that they no longer belong to the Bufo genus. North American toads are now classified Anaxyrus, which sounds like a very cool rebrand, if you ask me. Bufo versus Anaxyrus reminds me of the time my goth friend Ben wanted us to call him Sebastian with an E on the end. But unlike Anaxyrus, it didn't stick. I'm sorry, Sebastian.
They're a little bit fatter and their eyes are just a little bit more like bulbous. So I really kind of fell in love with them. But there's some really pretty toads too. Like in the southwestern U.S., there are these green toads and then these red spotted toads. And especially in South America, like I haven't seen like all the bufonid species, you know, that are down there. I mean, it would take, you know, millions of years. There's so many species of toads all over the world, but they are really diverse and interesting.
P.S. How many species of toad are out there hopping around and frowning? It's over 600. And some look like dead leaves with a face. And some are beautiful rainbow colors. Some we haven't even discovered yet. Right now, just kicking it in a hollow, I think. Is that where toads live? Do they live in toad hollows? Do they live in little like cardboard spots and trees and stuff?
Yeah, well, pretty much in burrows of different sorts. Some of them can do a little bit of digging, but a lot of times they'll live in other, you know, mammal burrows and things like that.
Do toads ever get chilly?
They don't freeze. Like some frog species can totally freeze in the winter. Mm-hmm. Like they produce this antifreeze, but toads don't do that. They just go underground, like below the frost line, where it's just warm enough that they can survive through the winter, and they hibernate, but they don't freeze. So they just live underground.
Don't freeze? That's handy. Oh, speaking of hands.
True or false? Toads have arms.
Yes, they do.
Okay, thank you. I don't feel like toads have four legs. I feel like they have two legs and two arms.
They do.
Toads have arms.
They do have arms. I mean, they're like little Popeye arms, right? Like, couldn't you just see a little tattoo on those little forearms? They're so fat. And the males have fatter forearms on purpose, like to
clutch on.
Clutch. Yeah, they have arms.
Okay, thank you. And tell me.
You will see it like in different places and references about their arms and like how they're.
Really? So is that official?
I'm going to say it is.
So Priya has done a lot of work with a lot of amphibians, namely salamanders, but her field work helping collect toad data made her love them even more.
Just a little ways into the season, the toads would come in and they would just be everywhere. And they were just so fun to watch. The eggs were everywhere. And then the tadpoles would be everywhere. And there's probably at least a couple of sites where there probably was close to 100 toads. We definitely saw a lot of them, you know, just out and about and just hopping along.
Are they solitary or do they burrow with friends, do you think? I wonder if they have girlfriends.
I think there are some records of them like in sharing burrows with other toads. And we actually found a multiple species like hibernaculum. But I do think that there are toads that will, you know, share the same types of burrows. And then there are some places like where the soil is really sandy and they can just kind of shimmy down under the sand, like especially in the more hotter environments. Because in a lot of places in the southern U.S., both east and west, they're active pretty much year-round. They don't really have much of a hibernation, but, you know, in the northern areas, they do.
Do they sleep?
I don't know. Yeah. Do they sleep? They do sleep. I've never seen a sleeping toad. Yeah, I haven't seen a sleeping toad.
Are they nocturnal or are they out in the day?
When they first come out, it's usually during the day and they will like just be singing their little hearts out like all during the day. And then they kind of shift to just calling at night. And so you don't really hear them during the day, but you'll see them out there sometimes. And we definitely, like when we'd go out in the field to our sites during the daytime, we would see the toads just everywhere. And they weren't always calling by that point. But then if you came to the same pond that night, you know, they would just be singing like crazy. Yeah. And so it was cool.
Oh, listen to these beautiful sounds.
Ah, so relaxing and soothing. Now let's hear something both cute and horrifying. Toads oozing out of your skin. Well, their mom's skin.
Okay, is there a type of toad where the baby toads are birthed from holes in the back, or was that an American Horror Story?
No, those are a different family. So they're not bouffonids. They're not true toads, but they are called like the Suriname toad. Mm-hmm. And yeah, that's like the craziest like reproductive strategy. They'll lay the eggs and they'll be fertilized, and then they like scoop them up with their legs onto their back, and then their back, like the chemistry of the skin changes, and it basically like absorbs the eggs into their back, and then the skin grows over the back over the top of it. And then when they get ready to hatch, they hatch out as like little live, it's not even tadpoles, it's like little live baby toads, and they just start cracking out of the mom's back.
What is the state of the toad these days? How are toads? Do they need us? Do they hate us?
Now, I know that cane toads are having a heyday right now. It is the era of the cane toad, but how in general are toads faring these days?
It depends. So some of the species of toads have been hit pretty hard by the chytrid fungus, the amphibian chytrid fungus, Batrachia chytrium dendrobatidis.
That's quite a mouthful.
Or BD for short. In Central America especially, there's a couple of the Atelopus genus species that are thought to be extinct. There's a golden toad that's in the Ancillus genus from Costa Rica it was like their iconic toad species, and they think that that's extinct.
Oh no.
I think they've found like maybe a couple of individuals here and there of all of these different species, but they've gone extinct, and it's because of this fungus, this fungal pathogen. So have you heard of like white nose in bats?
Mm-hmm.
So this actually came before, and then like the people in the white nose world like learned from that, but it took the BD world, the amphibian world, like a really long time to figure out that it was this fungal pathogen. It was described as a new species once they figured out that that's what it was. But it's been responsible for, it's questionable, but there's a recent paper that says that there's like 500 species that have declined throughout the world on that because of BD. But there's some question about that a little bit. So at least most people say like around like 200 or so species that have declined or gone extinct specifically because of the impacts of BD. And in the US in particular, some of our toad species have been the ones that have been most impacted.
What are the predators of toads?
Oh, there are various birds and snakes that will eat toads. Hognose snakes are kind of toad specialists. The toxin doesn't seem to bother them, mm-hmm. so they're able to manage with them. But crows, which are super smart, as you know, will like eviscerate toads and then just eat their gooey insides.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
That's what I do with airport sandwiches, is I just eat the middle.
But before I ask the questions that you submitted, patrons, a few sponsors of the show who make it possible for us to make a donation each week to a cause of the ologist's choosing. And this week, Priya requested a donation be made to the Amphibian and Reptile Conservancy to support inclusivity and diversity in amphibian and reptile conservations. So thank you, Priya. Okay, sponsors. This episode is brought to you by Merrick Pet Care. And y'all know I have a little dog named Gremmy, which is short for Gremlin. And y'all helped me name her. And there's nothing that we like more than seeing her happy, which means tasty dog foods. And Merrick has been crafting high-quality dog food for over 30 years. They were founded in Hereford, Texas. But Gremmy doesn't care about that. She cares about smushing her face in it and then licking the bowl. And I don't blame her, because they use real ingredients and home-style recipes like real Texas beef and sweet potato, or Grammy's pot pie. Grammy's like, Grammy's pot pie. Get away from it. It's mine.
I also like that on the bag, they show what's in it. And they always use deboned meat, fish, or poultry as the number one ingredient. And I think Grammy appreciates that. So check out Merrick online or in your local pet store and look for their new packaging with real ingredients shown on the bag and inside it. Yum, 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 yum.
With Capella University's FlexPath learning format, you can earn your degree online at your own pace and get support from people who care about your success. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu.
I know I usually save my secrets for the end of the episode, but I'm going to tell you my secret favorite candy. It's Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. It's really Reese's anything, but Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the thing that I'm like, have I had a bad day? I get these. Have I had a good day? I get these. Chocolate, salty peanut butter, the textures, I love everything about them. Also that there's two, so I'm like, oh, I get this one for later, which is 1 second later. Anyway, Reese's Peanut Butter Cups, I love you. That's all. If you're me, you can shop Reese's Peanut Butter Cups now at a store near you, found wherever candy is sold, and I am. Oh, hi, it's me, the lady that checks a bunch of scholarly articles before she believes anything, Allie Ward. And I feel like we are similar in that we have a fair amount of skepticism and we like to dive deep and find out what the actual facts are. This is why when it comes to any kind of supplements, I enjoy Ritual, which is a female-founded B Corp, meaning that they're holding themselves accountable to not just the company, but also to the health of people in our planet. And they're clinically backed, essential for women 18 plus multivitamin, has these high-quality, traceable key ingredients in bioavailable forms that are clean. Only about 1% of supplement brands are USP verified, and Ritual is one of them. So I like being able to trust what I'm putting in my body. From an aesthetic standpoint, I'll also tell you that Ritual are beautiful little vitamins. They look like lava lamps and they taste like mint. So taking my Ritual is part of my, I guess, morning ritual. That's probably why they named it that and I didn't even think about it. Anyway, no more shady business. Ritual's essential for women 18 plus is a multivitamin you can actually trust. So get 25% off your first month at ritual.com/ologies. You can start Ritual or add essential for women 18 plus to your subscription today. That's ritual.com/ologies for 25% off. Down the hatch.
All right, we're back. Your questions.
Okay, Jack Kelleher asks, life cycle of a toad, same as similar to a frog? Or do they live longer or shorter than a frog, do you think?
Oh, well, I think it depends on the species. Mm-hmm. And, you know, some frogs live pretty long. Some toads live pretty long. But you know, kind of on average in that sort of 5-ish, 7-ish, you know, 10-ish range mm-hmm. of years. But life cycle, yeah, fairly similar to a frog because, you know, they are frogs.
They are a frog.
Yeah, so they will, like, mostly be on land until it's breeding season, you know, or like be hibernating or whatever. And then they'll come to the ponds for that breeding season. They'll call, attract their mate. There are some toads that don't call and they're, oh my God, I can't believe there are some toads that will do that leg waving thing. You know, have you ever seen that? Oh my God,
no.
You have to. Yeah. So they like in these like stream environments where it's so loud because of all this stream noise, they have evolved this, like they literally take their back leg and they just like go like this.
Priya, by the way, is laying on the hotel room bed doing a move that looks like part synchronized swimming, but also part shipwreck victim.
And I think in some of them it's their front leg maybe too, but they anyway, or their arm. Yeah. And they just like, they're like, hey, I'm over here.
Oh my god, like hailing a cab.
Yes.
Oh my god.
And then some, you know, chick toad is walking by and she's like, oh okay, I see, all right.
I never knew that they did that.
Yeah, so there are, so anyway, I kind of digress there, but yeah, so generally speaking they attract their mate, you know, the female comes over and they, you know, they lay their eggs and mostly most of the species like lay a lot of eggs. And maybe you'll have a pretty decent amount of the eggs that'll hatch into tadpoles, but then like the tadpoles are food for all sorts of stuff.
Mm, delicious.
Oh my God. Have you ever seen like all the little toadlets popping out?
Are they really called toadlets?
Yes.
Oh God.
Toadlets.
Heather Albrecht says, what are toad communities like? I always see toads on the ground blazing their own trails, but then there's always another little guy not too far away. Do they reconvene at the end of the day in communal housing if they survived my lawnmower, or do they battle it out for prime resources? Do they have friends, do you think?
They all come together for the breeding season. But they're not really like friendly, you know, they're like all competing during that time. And it is true that you do tend to see them together. And I think that is probably because they must like hang out together wherever they're overwintering or hanging out during the hot months or something.
Lauren Kinney wants to know, do toads travel far from their burrow or wherever, whatever a toad home is called, to forage or find a mate? How's their commute? What's a toad commute like?
I think generally speaking, they're thought to be not, that they don't move that far. Ooh. But there was recently, one of my colleagues in Utah was tracking these Western toads and found that they moved like 5 or 6 miles, which, you know, a toad that hops, like that's a long way, like between where their breeding site was and where they, I think, were hanging out like in the winter, you know, because they'll go back to the same ponds where they emerged to go breed.
Aww.
And so when those habitats got fewer and farther between, like if they went back and their pond that they know was not there, they'll usually just go a little bit further until they find the next thing. And so probably like over time, these animals have developed the ability to go that far. And especially the ones in these montane habitats, you know, like there are a lot fewer areas, you know, and a lot more ground to traverse between ponds. That was one that I remember was like pretty striking. Like I just learned that a couple of years ago that, those particular ones were able to do that. And I'm pretty sure that there's nothing in the literature that suggests that they go that far.
Do they have a homing device? How are they finding the same ponds?
Yeah, I think they believe it's a little bit both like astrological as well as chemosensory. Wow. And they're able to like, you know, smell their home ponds basically and go back. Yeah,
oh, that's so
that's true of a lot of amphibians in general. Like they tend to go back to the same. And actually a lot of reptiles as well. Like they'll kind of, they have sight fidelity.
Do you have a favorite thing? The one thing about a toad that you love the most or about your job as a herper?
Oh, what is my favorite thing about a toad? I don't know. There's just, I just love their little bodies. Their little, that classic toad shape and just the little hop. And the face, you know, just that little classic toad face.
So there you have it. Toads have cute faces and little arms, and they are our friends. Thank you for being my friend, Smologites, and for listening. New Smologies episodes are out every other Thursday, and you can find them all together at alieward.com/Smologies. That will be linked in the show notes along with the credits because we keep these short. But before I go, I share a tidbit of advice from a lady who calls herself Dad Ward. That's me. And my advice is to make stuff. The best way to get good at something is to do it. So if you want to be a poet or a painter or a paleontologist, write and build and draw and dance and read and do experiments and just get in the game. Don't be afraid to mess up, because as long as you're doing, you're learning, and that is not messing up. Okay, Smologites. Bye-bye.
If you have kids or pets, you know stains and odors in your carpet and upholstery are inevitable, but the experts at ChemDry can help. ChemDry removes odors and stubborn stains by sending millions of carbonating bubbles deep within your carpet. ChemDry lifts dirt, urine, and stains to the surface to then be extracted away, giving you a cleaner and healthier home. Call 1-800-CHEMDRY or visit ChemDry.com to connect with your local ChemDry and learn about special offers in your area. That's 1-800-CHEMDRY or visit ChemDry.com today.
Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley. For the love of home.